But first, kick back and think about your dream vacation. Do you imagine yourself swimming in a nuclear lake or exploring the infamous suicide forest in Japan? Chances are that sounds more like a nightmare vacation. But some people actually do enjoy such macabre experiences. David Ferrier is a New Zealand journalist and the host of the Netflix documentary series Dark Tourist. So I asked him, what exactly is dark tourism?
Dark tourism is this idea, I suppose, of people that travel to sites of death and destruction as opposed to going to a nice beach or a resort.
Yeah, and the roots of dark tourism go all the way back. We can trace them back to like the gladiator games in ancient Rome and people attending public executions, people being, you know, watching people being beheaded. But it was two academics, John L. Lennon and Malcolm Foley, who came up with the name dark tourism in 1996, actually put that name on it. How big an industry is dark tourism? Do you have any idea?
There's no exact figures on it, and there's been no studies that have shown how big it is. But I guess when we were researching the show, we just took to social media and started, you know, looking at hashtags like dark tourism. And there's obviously a large volume of people that traveling to these places where something a little dark has happened. And I think it's exactly for the same reasons as you mentioned with the gladiators, you know. We're always drawn to the macabre on some level.
And it fits within, as you say at the beginning of each episode, you're interested in the weird and stuff off the beaten track, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, when I was working, sort of doing an entertainment sort of journalism round on the TV news here in New Zealand, I'd always be drawn to kind of people doing strange things, you know, the fringes of society, cults, you know, just people. I know people. I sort of consider myself to be a fairly boring person. I think just to entertain myself, I just like being around people doing unusual things. So I guess when we started working on Dark Tourist, I sort of was thinking about this, you know, do I want to dedicate a year and a half of my life to this? And looking at the sorts of places I'd go and the people I'd meet, I just sort of thought it was the dream way to spend that time.
Mm-hmm. In the first episode of Dark Tourist, you traveled to Medellin, Colombia, to investigate narco-tourism. What is narco-tourism?
It's been popularized, I suppose, with, you know, movies like Blow and then shows like Narcos, where essentially you're, as a tourist, visiting the sites associated with the narcos in Colombia, primarily Pablo Escobar and his crew. So there's, you know, there's a lot of debate on the ground about how much weight is given to this sort of tourism. I mean, you can go and visit the old prison that Pablo Escobar built for himself to be incarcerated in. And there's huge signs up there saying, you know, no tourism. And yet all around that prison, there are tour groups arriving by the busload to tour that particular prison. And I guess where it gets pretty ethically murky, and I mean, that's why we wanted to explore this area as well, because it is incredibly ethically murky. You know, we were being shown around by Popeye, who was Pablo Escobar's hitman. And, you know, he served his jail time, but he did kill over 200 people, including his girlfriend. And now he's rebranded himself as a YouTube celebrity, and he's incredibly likable. And because of shows like Narcos, people kind of treat him like they just bumped into Beyonce or Jay-Z or something. Mm-hmm. He's like this larger-than-life figure, and people are just amazed that he's there. They're getting selfies with him. And you kind of have to stop at times and just go, like, no, this guy is, he's not a good guy.
A couple of narco tourists from New York had come up to check out Pablo's prison. They hadn't expected to run into Popeye, and they're starstruck.
He's famous all over the world, so.
And then what do you think of, you know, the whole story?
What they did was awful, but some people love him, some people hate him.
Where do you stand?
That's a good question. I just want to know the history. That's about it.
It's crazy. Yeah, I mean, like a dream come true with me. Like, this is Popeye.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they loved him.
What did you learn from talking to him? You mentioned, and this comes up in the episode too, in the voiceover you talk about. Well, no, you say it to his face. You're so likable, yet you've killed, you know, you're a murderer. You've killed more than 300 people. So was it frightening for you to talk to him? Can you take me back to tell me about your frame of mind while you were talking to him?
Yeah, it was a strange thing because I personally would sort of flip between the two because he was so charismatic. He was like hanging out with that friendly guy at the bar or at the pub. He was just so nice and so charismatic. But then there are times, there was another tour going on at the same time, and something the tour guide sort of made a snide remark as he walked past Popeye, and he changed. Like, you saw a little sort of flash in his eyes, and he got, you know, all the humor was gone, and he left and walked over to this guy and got up in his face, and I don't know what he said exactly, but the other guy certainly backed down and wasn't being at all cocky anymore. And you know, at moments like that, you do remember what he did and the fact that he doesn't seem particularly sorry about it. I mean, I wouldn't want to spend time alone with him because I feel he's someone who can just flip very easily.
How much did you struggle with the ethical questions involved in just like having a guy like this, a convicted murderer, putting him on screen and giving him screen time?
I suppose, like with a lot of the topics we covered, we were just there to observe and to show what happened. I mean, these things are happening. People are turning up in droves. And I think just in showing the way people operate, it's giving the audience sort of a chance to think about how they feel about those situations. I mean, I've always sort of been of the opinion that you can't ignore something that's going on. I'd prefer to show the world what is happening in a certain place. And you know, the number of people that have come up to me or tweeted me or Facebooked me saying they had no idea this particular industry existed and they're starting to have discussions about this and think about this for themselves. I think that's why we made this show.
Yeah. I noticed that throughout Dark Tourist, you're kind of caught between two roles. You're an investigator as a journalist, but you're also experiencing the various Dark Tourist activities along with these other people. So I'm curious about how this dual role as observer and participant affected the way you approached your work in the series.
Oh, I still think I'm figuring that role out for myself, to be honest, because no, I mean, that's an interesting thing. When we were sort of looking at the show, the original sort of plan was for me to just be a complete observer from the sidelines, following the tourists and just gauging their experience. Because I suppose my background, although it was in light entertainment journalism, it was always sort of to be that observer and just to report back. It's the way a journalist works, right?
Yeah.
But then it's just the nature of making a series that is going to be interesting as someone who's hosting the show. But essentially, we just sort of found out as we went, it's just much better if I get involved and have those visceral experiences myself. And then it was just a matter of, okay, how am I going to experience this?
Yeah, well, for what it's worth, I think you did a really good job of finding a good balance between the two. In the second episode of Dark Tourist, you visited Milwaukee here in our great state of Wisconsin. Why?
We went there because Jeffrey Dahmer lived and killed there. And yeah, we knew there were serial killer tours, especially in the United States. There are so many serial killer tours. And so we were thinking, okay, we're obviously going to cover this sort of phenomenon in Dark Tourist. Which one do we do? And Milwaukee just seemed like a combination of a really beautiful town and a beautiful setting. The tour was really well established and a lot of people went on it. And I am intrigued, like a lot of people are, by serial killers. And Dahmer was just someone that I sort of probably knew the most about. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up going there.
I'm very much into spirits and into death. That's something I've
You're
been...
You're into death?
I'm into death.
Hence Jeffrey Dahmer.
Yes,
who
Jeffrey
caused
Dahmer.
A lot of death.
He did cause a lot of death, but he was like the perfect storm of issues that I think caused this man to become what he was. So I actually have a fair amount of empathy and sympathy for him.
Right, so that's something I'm struggling with because I understand the empathy to a point.
Yes.
And then at the same time, he did absolutely unforgivable things. So, you know, the empathy can only go so far.
He didn't enjoy the act of killing at all. He just wanted someone there for him.
You also arranged to meet up with Wendy Patricas, the lawyer who defended Dahmer in court. Can you tell me about that meeting?
She was amazing. She was working with the lead lawyer on that case, and she was sort of the junior defense attorney, and she had just almost gotten out of law school, and it was her job to sit with Dahmer and to get all his, just get his narrative from him. So with Wendy, he went through all his killings and his whole background and his whole psyche, and she sort of took notes through all that. And she had you know, she had drawings that he had drawn her of the layout of his apartment and, you know, what his plan was to get this big sort of almost shrine organized in his around on his dining room table. And he had drawn all this out in detail for her. It was like some sort of drawing out of True Detective or something. She was just a great part of that because after, especially in that particular episode, we had spent time on this tour and things got pretty tacky and pretty silly. And then to suddenly meet someone who had defended him and could talk to his actual qualities and his personality and what he had done, that added this level of gravitas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As I'm sure you know, Friends of Dahmer's victims weren't happy about this tour, which is called the Cream City Cannibal Tour. How does that affect your thoughts and feelings about the tour?
We didn't want it to treat it as an infomercial for this place. I don't think we even mentioned the name of the tour. We just sort of wanted to show it for what it was and to treat it respectfully because obviously, you know, this happened in the not too distant past and there have been protests about it when it first started, which have all calmed down now. But I think someone who watches that certainly wouldn't get any kind of approving tone. I think for me personally, I found the whole thing reasonably distasteful. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone watching the particular tour would probably find a similar thing.
What was the darkest dark tourism experience you had while filming the show? Can you point to one?
I found spending time in Kazakhstan at the Polygon quite a sobering experience because we were there for quite a long time just because of the amount of travel it takes to get there. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is the most, you know, one of the most atomic bomb places on Earth. It's where the Russians tested a lot of their nuclear weapons. And, you know, the landscape is just very, for want of a better word, it's just incredibly depressing. There's just nothing there. There's these huge monolithic structures rising up out of the ground that we used to take technical readings of the blasts when they went off. And they're all just, these huge concrete structures are still there in the landscape. And we were there with a doctor for some time who, he's in the documentary, but his wife passed away from cancer relating to radiation. He gave us the name of a doctor who worked at an orphanage we ended up going to, and a lot of the kids there certainly had the after effects of radiation. Mm-hmm. Seeing the effects of those tests still playing out today, that was pretty dark. It didn't get much dark. I mean, when you've got kids who are deformed from nuclear testing, you know, it probably doesn't get much darker than that in this show. But again, like we that was important. Like that particular part of the documentary sort of started off as a bit of a road trip. You know, me and Andy, who was this dark tourist, venturing into this landscape, we'd all heard about the Polygon. We went swimming in this nuclear lake that had been made from an atomic bomb blast, and then to suddenly be in the orphanage and sort of go, you know, this isn't entertainment. This isn't just an adventure. This is how it affects the population here. Being able to get that information out and sort of suddenly present that to viewers, I think, was, you know, again, part of the reason we made the show.
Yeah. Why do you think people are interested in this, in dark tourism?
I think it's a combination of things. I have the personal belief that everyone is terrified of dying, even if they think they're not. I think they are on some level. And I think dark tourism and visiting these places is a way to talk about death without it gives people the language to talk about it. And, you know, it's as simple as, you know, human curiosity. It's why do you sort of look at a car crash when you drive by? You know, everyone has that sort of curiosity. If they want to see something, probably see something morbid. That's why people look, right? It's simple curiosity. And I think that plays into it as well.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Do you think there's something going on in our culture right now that is allowing dark tourism to become increasingly popular?
Oh, I think it's a combination of things. I think people, a certain amount of the population are freer to travel probably, and thanks to the internet, people know about some of these places and can get there. It seems like the world is in a pretty dire, especially when you look at the United States, things are in a pretty dire situation. I think people do start thinking about how bad things can get, and they maybe want to learn about how bad things have gotten in the past and be reminded of that.
Yeah. Well, when times, especially as you mentioned here in the U.S., become even more dystopian and more apocalyptic, more or George Orwellian, do you think that dark tourism will become more or less popular? Isn't there a chance to become less popular because we're kind of living in a dark tourism world?
Yeah, it's funny. I thought about that. I mean, I'm always kind of fascinated associated with the media people are consuming? Because at the moment, it feels like we're never getting as darker entertainment, and people are watching it and they're devouring it. It's not like they're, it's not like everyone. I think a certain part of society wants escapism in their viewing and their media, and then there's another half that just wants to dive deeper into the misery.
David Ferrier is the host of the Netflix documentary series, Dark Tourist. You can find out more about David at wpr.org/beta. Do you think virtual reality is a recent invention? It's not. It goes back about 17,000 years to the famous cave paintings in France.
When you stand in the center of one of these caverns, there are animals all around you. And as you turn and look around the cavern, they seem to run around you. It's like you're in the middle of a hunt.
David Ewald says virtual reality is about to get real. I'm Doug Gordon. You're listening to Beta on Wisconsin Public Radio.